The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 680. It's the 10th of January, 2017. On the podcast today, I have Dave Reeves, Managing Director of Keras Resources, KRS ticker, covers their recent drilling results at its flagship Klondike Gold project and their upcoming ASX listing. Also on the podcast, successful private investor Smudge Dan talks about the following stocks: Parallel Media Group, Mercom Capital, Tajori, React Energy, and URU Metals. Plus, full-time investor Wheelie Dealer talks about the following stocks: Boohoo.com and Gokom Pay. I also have today's suggested one for your watch list. It is Hague London Oil, HNL ticker, submitted by James. Thanks for that. James, don't forget, do your own research on everything or anything mentioned on this podcast. It's not intended as investment advice. It's just information for you. Also, I have the top five most followed companies on the Vox Markets website and app platform over the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs on Vox Markets platform this morning.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Dave Reeves, Managing Director of Keras Resources. That's KRS ticker. Dave, thank you for coming back on.
Absolute pleasure, Justin, and a happy new year to you and everyone listening.
Yeah, happy new year, Dave. And you started out with a bit of positive news. We'll get into that in a bit. Before we get into that, I always like to remind people of what you're all about, and for new listeners as well. So what does Keras Resources do, Dave? What are you all about there?
Our main focus, gold in Australia, in Western Australia, and our flagship project is a project called Klondike, up in the Pilbara, just under 400,000 ounces of gold so far, and looking to expand that over the coming year.
Excellent stuff. Well, let's get to yesterday's news. And you announced further high-grade gold within the broad mineralized zones at Klondike. Can you take us through some of the detail there, what it means? And for people maybe, you know, not aware of mining and gold, is this positive news? Is this good news, Dave?
Yeah, look, we're very, very happy about it. We did a very limited drill program across several of the tenements. Previous announcement was at a place called Copenhagen, which was some extremely high-grade results. And now we've tested the main shear zone over about a kilometre and a half of strike. And in every one of the holes we drilled, we got this really nice, thick, broad mineralised zone. Let's call it 40 to 60 metres wide. Going sort of 1.3, 1.4 grams. And then within that, we got a higher grade zone averaging, give or take, 20 to 25 metres, averaging 2.5 grams. So that what that leads to is that all of these are shallow. Most of those were from surface or near to surface, those intercepts. So it's obviously an open pit we're looking at. And those grades, if we look at the broader intercept, that's very much a bulk mining, low-cost bulk mining potential. Or alternatively, you can be a bit more selective and go for the higher grade. So it gives us great flexibility going forward. But most importantly, it verifies the historic results on which the 400,000-ounce resource is based. It's giving us some information on how to best assay. We've seen coarse gold, and we're looking at various assay techniques for that. And it just gives us a good platform and lots of confidence to launch into the main drill program later this year.
Yeah, well, yesterday the share price opened up positively on that news, and then I think a couple of sales came in and brought it back down. And I saw, one or two people mentioning sort of, oh, maybe there's funding issues here or whatever, because it was positive news, no doubt about that. Do you have any information, or can you share anything about the concerns some people have expressed about funding?
Yeah, for sure. Look, obviously a bit disappointing putting out a couple of nice news releases lately that's adding real value to the company and not seeing the share price move is frustrating for us and I imagine most shareholders. From a funding perspective, obviously only so much I can say, but we've obviously publicly said we are intending to get a listing away on the ASX. We are well into drafting everything, independent geo reports, prospectuses, etc. And we will put out an announcement on how that's progressing, but it's all in line with expectations. And that's where the bulk of any funding is going to come from. You know, that's where we're intending to raise the real money, is down on the ASX. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure if that, yeah, makes people feel more comfortable or not, but you know, that's the plan for funding heading forward.
Yes, I assume it will. And when is that plan? When are you planning to be floated on ASX?
We've talked in the past about the end of quarter one, so not too far away. So you know, it's very busy times, and that's what we're aiming for, and it's all looking on track at the moment.
Oh, excellent stuff. Okay. And aside from that, you know, big piece of news, what's the next sort of bit of news we can expect from Keras, Dave?
Look, there will be various updates that we've got planned on some of the other activities that we're doing there. We've alluded to, which again, I probably can't say too much about. No. We've got screen fire assays. So what that means is, I mentioned we saw visible gold out of interest. For those more technically minded, we saw visible gold in a 1 meter intercept, but we only got 1 gram a ton, which means that the assay that we did didn't pick up on that visible gold. So we're doing a thing called screen fire assays for when you got this coarse gold, and we expect quite a major boost to some of these numbers to better reflect the coarse gold nature. And so that'll be coming out shortly as well, increasing these values. And then really it's all about the listing, raising the money and getting into a really, really large draw program.
Excellent stuff. All right, Dave. Well, listen, every day on the podcast, I highlight the top five most followed companies on the Vox platform here. So can you give someone who's not following you, can you give now three reasons why someone should hit that follow button on your page, please?
For sure. Look, I think we've got a great gold project, and I think we're seeing a lot of movement in the gold price coming off its lows, which is good. The project and the company has very large exploration potential upside. We intend to prove that up, and we're soon to bring in some significant funding via the ASX to unlock that value.
Marvellous. Good to chat to you, Dave, as always, and I look forward to chatting to you again in the near future when you have some more news out, fella.
Likewise. Cheers, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is private investor Smudge Dan. You're right, fella?
Very well, Justin. Thank you.
And we haven't spoken for a couple of months now. And I know you've started off the year with a bit of a bang. PAA yesterday, which you hold. What happened there? I don't know much about. Do you know, so many stocks now get passed on and think, I don't know much about PAA. All I saw was on social media that it was doing very well. I looked at one of the biggest rises of the day. So what's the deal there? You hold some stock there, Dan, didn't you?
That's right, yeah. I've been in there for quite a while now. Probably been in there for the best part of a year. Mm. And it's a funny old company. It was actually founded by one of the founders of Sky TV, one of the four founders who sold out to Rupert Murdoch years ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's been one of these companies that's been a dog for years and really hasn't done much over the last few years. But this guy is pretty independently wealthy, as you can imagine. And he owns the rights to a company called Brick Live, which is a sort of interactive live Lego show, which is one of the official partners of Lego.
Right.
So I just kind of thought that a company with at the time had a £300,000 market cap doing a deal potentially with Lego could be something a bit special, and I think, you know, what has happened over the last few days is that people have seen the possibilities here, and there's been a lot of people buying in. So yeah, I mean, I was sort of in 8-9p, and I think it topped out yesterday at around about 45p. So
nice.
So not a bad start to the year.
Well, and what is your strategy there? Do you risk a little bit? Do you sell off some? Do you, you know, reduce your exposure there?
Yeah, I mean, I've still got a holding. I've still got probably 75% of my holding because, you know, the situation, other than the share price going up, the situation hasn't changed at all. So I still think if a deal is done involving Lego with a company, which, you know, even now the market cap is still below £1 million.
So it's
still tiny. I mean, you know, it's a very risky option. They've got a lot of debt, but most of that debt is in the name of the chairman. You know, he's lent unsecured and non-interest bearing nearly £1.5 million to the company.
Yes.
So he needs to find a way to try and get his money back. And he's also got a big shareholding, also owns about 34% of the company as well. So you know, it's these are risky plays. But
the game is still on there.
The game is very much still on, yeah. So hence, okay. I'm still holding 75%. But yeah, I mean, if something goes up that sort of level in a day or two, then you should de-risk, and you know, if you can take your initial capital out and leave the rest to run, then that's got to be a winner, I think.
Yeah, and looking back at 2016, what's been, say, your standout performer?
There's been a couple of good ones actually. MCC, which I think I mentioned probably around sort of April time last year. It was MMO at the time, Mercom Oil Sands, and it changed its name to Mercom Capital.
Yeah.
So I was buying in that sort of, I don't know, it was late 2015, probably around about 1.6p, and that topped out the other day, I think, at about 49.5p. So, you know, wow. if you'd have managed to ride it all that way through, which I didn't, unfortunately. I sold a bit too early, but that would have been a 30 bagger.
Wow.
So that would have been very nice indeed. But yeah, you don't see too many of those, do you?
No. So, for example, how much of that did you take? I mean, you're in it, let's say, 1.8, 1.9. And when did you get out?
I sold out. I think I sold the last of mine at around about 20p. So I missed out on the top of the rise. But it was one of those things that if you look back on, I think, would I have done anything differently? I wouldn't have done. I would have done exactly what I did this time around. So,
yeah.
And I think the surprise rise up to sort of nearly 50p is probably, you know, shocked pretty much everybody involved. And it was a fairly unique situation. But you know, a nice trade and. You know, we look forward and see what else is out there.
Yeah, you can't be disappointed with a 10-bagger.
If you are,
then get out of the game because nothing's going to please you. You know, it's a good thing.
Exactly, yeah. So I was happy with that. You know, there's another one that was a company called Tejuri, TJI. I think I mentioned that probably around the same time. And that, I think, I got 1,200% return on that one. I still hold a few of those, and I think that's probably... You know, they'll probably wind down that company and hopefully return all the cash to shareholders.
Yeah.
So I think there's still a little bit of mileage in that. So yeah, some good ones. I mean, you know, the investing in these tiny companies is obviously, as I said earlier on, it comes with a hell of a lot of risk, and you get some duds as well. But as long as you manage your capital appropriately, you can do extremely well.
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, like you said, no one can foresee a 30-bagger rise at all. So there's huge risk attached, a huge reward can be attached to the risk. But like you said, if you play it right, then you limit your losses on the ones that don't work. Then you can still, like, because let's be honest, looking at a binary version, you can only lose 100%. But you can gain several thousand percent if you get the odd 1 or 2 thousand percent. That's all you need, isn't it? But hopefully, you don't even lose 100%. You know, hopefully, you limit your loss to less than 100% of a thing because
I mean, you get the occasional one. I mean, I was in a company called Sidekick at SYQ, which was a foreign company, and there was some shenanigans were going on there with the chairman, and they basically went into suspension, and now they've delisted. So I only had a relatively small position there, so it's not the end of the world, but it's still annoying that these things happen. But you kind of got to take the rough with the smooth with these things.
Yeah Okay, so what are you looking at the moment? What do you think has potential over the next couple of weeks, months, or whatever?
Well, I mean actually this morning there's one that I've been building a position in, a company called React Energy, REAC, and they had an RNS this morning, which was rather interesting. They've been doing some business with a company called Ebios, the Bulgarian-based kind of new green energy company that has quite a bit of backing from the Chinese.
Yeah.
And I kind of thought that, because Ebios was lending the money, and I kind of thought that they would probably try and solidify this connection. And true enough, today there was an RNS came out that Ebios have taken on some of the debt from React and have basically acquired 51% of React in the process. So it's a real game changer for this company. I mean, they basically own a variety of plots of land and have got planning permission for some biomass energy and some wind turbines, and they've done a lot of the groundwork, but they've never seemed to be able to get anything sort of over the line. I think with Ebios involved in the process and the financial backing that they have, I think that could be quite special going forward. Plus the fact that the shares were purchased at a premium 45% to the prevailing market price.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking there's going to be some pretty good movement on there going forward. And obviously it's 51% of the company now. It should be into sticky hands with Ebios taking it.
Yeah. And what is it? 2.8 million market cap at the moment, are they? Is that, were they? Just below 3 million.
Yeah. That's
okay.
It.
All right, and any others there, Dan?
So the other one that seems to be getting a lot of attention at the moment is URU.
Yeah.
So I've got a position there. I took some in the placing yesterday as well. I think that there seems to be a bit of movement on this now. I think that it's, you know, it's they've always had this massive nickel resource, and nothing's really happened with it for a number of years now. But it seems now that the company is finally starting to go somewhere. I think, you know, John Zorbas, who's the CEO, was the CEO of Mercom Capital. So obviously, off the back of that rise, there's probably a bit of interest coming from that as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they've got a huge nickel resource. It's just a case of you know, how do they get it out of the ground in a cost-effective manner? The nickel price going up has obviously helped, promote some of this interest as well. But I think what a lot of people don't realise is that they've also got a substantial magnetite resource, which is easier to access. And I think that actually could be the thing that the catalyst that drives this forward in the short term. So,
yeah, I've seen a lot of posters getting very excited, and like you said, there's it's at the moment. Oh, it's gone up today 18%, but it's just below 5 million market cap, and their nickel resource there, or the nickel asset there, is proposed to be one of the top 12 of the world size wise. So it's massive.
That's correct.
You know, it's massive.
Yeah,
and part of me thinks, well, they need a lot of money even to get a feasibility study on that. But, you know, when you're valued at, you know, like you said, sub 5 million, and you've got that massive asset there, then there's going to be someone could come in, could they? Let's be honest. But especially when the nickel prices start improving and people say, wow, hang on a sec, that is a massive asset. You know, someone could come ahead and help them with that in some way. But,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, as you say, the price going up, you know, there is a tipping point here where it starts to become, you know, very favourable to be investing in this sort of stuff. And as I say, the nickel price moving the way it is, the movement within the company, you know, them actually doing something, because they seem to have spent, you know, a few years not doing very much at all. But actually now, you know, with these work programmes they're putting into place, you know, there's going to be a news flow. So there's short-term catalysts from that. And, you know, they also mentioned acquisitions, I think, in yesterday's RNS. So that'll be interesting to see what they've done there. They've got a bit of cash in the bank now. So, yeah, you know, it should be interesting times there.
Well, do you know what? I wrote a blog on Horizonte Minerals, who are in the nickel space, and I did a bit of research on nickel. And it, in 2016, the actual nickel market was in deficit. So I think it was 80,000 tonnes, undersupplied. So, and they think there's going to be a few weeks, months of weakness, but gradually towards the end of this year and next year, you should see that going towards $12,000, you know, dollars per ton, up towards. And I think some of the bigger banks have targets of around about $16,000 to $20,000, you know, dollars a ton. So it's heading in the right direction fundamentally, the nickel space, you know. So it's definitely a good place, especially when you see the size of the market cap and the size of that asset. I mean, there's obviously a disjoint between how they're going to get that out of the ground or how they're going to do a feasibility study. But in the meantime, you know, it's their asset, so it's massive, you know. So
yeah, exactly. And it's, you know, it's just a increasing in price as the nickel price goes up, and it's entirely possible that they'll at some point just one of the big players will come along and just purchase it off them.
Exactly.
And if that happens, you know, it's not going to be for 5 million quid, that's for sure.
No, exactly. Yeah. Marvellous, Dan. Yeah, good heads up on that one. And so that and React worth looking at and doing some research on. Cheers, fella, and hopefully speak again soon.
Perfect. Cheers, Justin. Take care. Bye-bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is full-time private investor, Wheelie Dealer. You all right, fella? Happy New Year, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Happy New Year, mate. Yeah, I'm good. Thanks. Not bad at all.
What do you think of the market so far this in 2017? Oh. The FTSE hit all-time highs. It's pulled back a little bit today.
It's incredible, isn't it? Incredible. I mean, after having such a miserable... I had an awful 2016, as I've said to you many a time. Mm. And after the misery of that, it's just so nice to come into this year and just be making money like oh, it's just... I mean, it feels too easy at the moment. I really get that sense, you know. I mean... Yeah, last week, start of this week, it's just been so strong. Yes, we can do no wrong at the moment, you know.
Yeah, have Lovely. You changed anything in your investing technique or strategy for this year or what?
Well, I mean, the main thing is that, you know, I got really caught out in my hedges. And what I've basically done is quite a simple thing. I've just introduced stop losses. So whenever I put a hedge, you know, short an index to try and cover me if the markets fall, I've got pretty tight stop losses. Funnily enough, I got stopped out yesterday on the NASDAQ 100. And, okay. You know, it's sort of frustrating, but it's the way it works. You know, you get stopped out, you take a small loss, and then you move on. But the point is the market's making the decision for me. I don't have to think about it. It just stops me out. That's it. No point, you know, no point worrying. The market's going up. Why fight it, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that little change will make a big difference.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So... As it is, you have, what is it? Is it two portfolios you have there running at one time or what?
Yeah, I got a few things. I've got like a little income portfolio, which has sort of 12 stocks in it, which is all about the dividends, you know, trying to get sort of 5% dividend. And then I've got like what I call my trading ISA, which has got sort of just, I think it's got about 43 stocks in it of various position sizes and whatever. That's really the nub of what I do. And of course, I've got diversification across those stocks, you know. So if you get a problem on one stock, it's sort of offset by others, you know. So that's the way I tend to do things.
How and often do you sell us? I mean, I would find 43 really hard to look after.
You know. Yeah, this is amazing. Do you know, I hardly sell anything these days. I've really changed how I do things. I used to, you know, every time we'd sort of like get in towards, you know, towards the summer or something, I used to think, right, I'm going to start reducing my stocks, selling off some stocks and whatever. I don't really do that like I used to. I think I've learned that you've got to let things run. If you've got a really good stock and it's in an uptrend and it's steadily going up, don't cut its legs off. Let it go, you know? Yeah. And I think that's a big... I mean, what I do is I top slice every now and again. I mean, for instance, on Boohoo, which has been an absolute monster of a share, it's been fantastic. Mm-hmm. I sliced a few off. I think it was around 120, just because the position was getting so big. But then since then, it's gone up even more, you know, which is great, obviously. But... But yeah, so I tend to sort of top slice a bit, but you know, I tend to stick with things much more than I did. And I think a lot of it is that when you have a share that you're sticking with, you really start to know it. You know it inside out. And I think that makes a big difference as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. When did you buy Boohoo?
I bought in a couple of chunks. I bought first, I think, at around 60-70p. And then it went against me, you know, but luckily I only had a small position. It went against me. I think it went down to about 20 odd pence or something. I was like, oh God, this is going to be a disaster. Then they started to recover and I could see that they were getting a grip of things. And I bought a load more, I think around 40 and probably more at 60, probably more at 80. And I started, you know, scaling up as we went up. Mm-hmm. And it's just turned into an absolute monster.
Yeah.
And I had an update today and the numbers are just so strong and they're accelerating. That's the shocking thing. It's like, you know, earlier in the year they were doing, I can't remember, they said they were doing 35% growth. Now they're doing 50. It's incredible.
Is there a time now?
I think we'll see 200 on that. I think I'm pretty sure we will.
Yeah, so it's 144 today. It looks like a little bit. And so will you continue to top slice that or just going to let it run now?
At the moment, I'm running it, but if it starts to get such a big position, I'll probably slice a bit more. I don't like things getting more than about, say, 8% of my portfolio. That's my sort of limit. Mm. You know, because the trouble is, things can be going well, and then you get something like, you know, Sports Direct, where they have a problem with a warehouse. And all of a sudden, it says full 50%. So, you know, that's why I do like to sort of lock in some profit. Yeah. Once we start getting quite silly. Because, you know, the thing with Boohoo is it's on a PE that's absolutely insane. It's on like a forward PE of about 60 or 70 or something.
Yeah.
You know, You know, so that's where the risk is, the valuation risk, really.
I had this similar kind of problem with Couve. I bought a Couve, and I could see there, I mean, down at 15 pence, I bought those, and because you know, their directors went in for a big chunk of 25 pence, and it was 15 pence. I thought, well, I'm going to go in here. And I added some more at about 30 pence, and then it went up to 60 pence. Well, I doubled my money. Even you know, original stake is quadrupled, but then even at 30 pence, I've doubled the money. So I sold half, and the next day it went up to 90 pence. It's like so. But I mean, do you know what? You know, it can easily go the other way. You never know. So yeah, at least I got a profit then. Yeah, but it's come back since, and it obviously, I mean, the time, you can't time something. You know, micro timing is very hard, isn't it? But it did come back. Mm-hmm. It came back down below 50 pence, and I think it's just now back to about 50 pence now. But you know, it's always
It's better to have sort of rules, isn't it? Like I said, I have like a sort of 8% rule. It's not totally hard and fast. I mean, you know, maybe I could stretch to 9 or 10 if I had something I really, really liked that was still undervalued, you know. But having a rule of sort of 8% is quite a good way of sort of just making you do. It's a bit like a stop loss, you know. You have a level. If it goes over that level, no ifs, no buts. That's the rule. You close it out, and I think that's just the best way to do things, really.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
just like I say, it's all hindsight, isn't it? It's easy after say, oh, it went up, you know. And it's like, well, it could so easy have tanked.
Well, I've got a strategy now on penny stocks. You know, when I double, I sell half my holding. And that way I can never really lose, you know, and then I look for something else with that money. And a couple of times, you know, I've sold half and it's gone up, you know, aggressively after I've sold. And I thought, well I'm still holding. I'm still holding. It doesn't matter. I know, I haven't lost that.
You're still in the game, aren't you? That's the thing.
Exactly. All right. So what do you
think of the markets yourself then, Jess? Because to me, it all feels really toppy.
Well, I'm more in the smaller cap arena, and they're more news-driven. Unless there's a massive sell-off, it doesn't really trickle down, you know. And they're more sort of specific news. They move on in news specific to them generally, you know. So it's not so. I mean, I've held obviously bigger stocks, FTSE, and sometimes you just get caught up in the sway of the FTSE. The FTSE's down. This company's down. You think, well, there's no reason why it should be down if they're trading well, but because the FTSE's down, everything, you know, it pulls everything down. But I had a cracking year in 2016 with small cap stocks. You know, it's literally. It's like getting that strategy and almost fine-tuning it a bit. And I'm hopefully sort of trying to get in there, managing risk properly. And like I said, you know, sell half of it doubles and looking for something else.
And compounding it up as you put it into something else and it multiplies again. And yeah, no, definitely, that's definitely the way to do it.
So I'm happy.
It seems funny because markets have sort of broken out, you know, to fresh all-time highs. And that's a really bullish development. I mean, there's no two ways around it, really.
Chances
are, if they pull back, they're only going to go back to the sort of breakout level, and then they're going to push up again.
Yeah.
So, you know, it all looks pretty strong.
Yeah, we got Trump coming in a few days' time, so I'll see what he's going to do. So, individual stocks-wise, what else are you looking at? I mean, Boohoo had a nice update. What else?
Yeah, we were sort of talking earlier about GoCo, G-O-C-O, which had an update today. I mean, I think it's a short and sweet. It doesn't tell us much, but it basically says, you know, in line with expectations, the leverage is falling. Because they had quite a bit of debt, because they span out of Esure, E-S-U-R, and it's that terrible advert with the opera singer. But yeah, they span out of those. And the thing that's quite interesting about it is that on a forward PE, it's something like forward PE of 10, which ain't expensive. Yeah. And when you're talking about an internet kind of stock, I mean, when you look at things like Money Supermarket, you've got things like Zoopla, you know, and all that kind of stuff, they all seem to be on pretty high multiples. You know, I think Zoopla's like nearly on PE of 30 or something, and I'm sure, you know, so they have tend to have quite high multiples. And GoCompare seems to be doing pretty well, you know. Yeah. Since Esure, what happened was it sort of like lost its way, because they used to have the opera singer. And in that space, it's all about the branding and the marketing. Number one is the meerkats. You know, the meerkats is the one that everyone goes to. So it's all about the branding. And they sort of lost their way because they did. Remember, they did that sort of like Wales theme thing, didn't they? It was all a bit weird.
Yeah.
And Esure bought, you know, GoCompare got in trouble. Esure bought it. and they reinstated Gio Compario, the opera singer guy.
Gio Compario,
and as annoying as he is, everyone knows him, you know, and it actually works. I notice there's a lot more adverts on telly at the moment with them in it, and there's one where they're doing flight comparison as well now. You know, he's got him stood on top of an airplane doing acrobatics or something. And so I think it looks quite interesting, you know, and it's really cheap.
Yeah, it's a lot of competition in that thing, and it's the ones that grab the attention is the ones. And if it's a working, it's odd really that a working formula, Duke and Paro there, and they got rid of him. And
what are they
replacing with whales? What the animals? Yeah, whales.
It was all weird. If you remember, they had like. They used to have signs with these really long names with Go Compare.
Oh, yes, in Wales. They're based in the country. I think the animal whales.
Yeah. It was just painful, you know. Yeah. No wonder their sales got hit.
Yeah, and so Esau just said, listen, you've gone wrong here. Yeah? You've spun off. Yeah. It's almost like, you know, you've got to, if something's annoying and really getting to people, stick with it. You know, keep going with it. Yeah. Drill it in further.
See
how much we can annoy people with this. Because if it's annoying people, you're doing something right. Because, you know,
they're remembering it.
Yeah. So what do you reckon is, it's up today, almost at 8.5%, and it's at 72. Yeah, so it'd be interesting to see if it gets above that 73 level, because it's had a little peak there a couple of sessions ago.
It's literally only been on the market about 3 weeks or something. It's really, you know, it's really new.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is with Esau, that would, you know, coming out before, they've got that Peter Wood, I think his name is, who's like a real sort of veteran of the industry.
Yeah.
And he's a sharp cookie. And I think, I can't quite remember the details, but I think Esau still have a bit of an interest in Go Compare. I mean, he's still got a stake in it or something. We'll need to check that.
Yeah. Okay. And do you see any, I mean... So you're hedging there. I mean, do you see any? I mean, we obviously coming towards March and stuff in a few months' time. The Brexit worries and all that, and the hard Brexit. Are you gonna? You know, are you happy with the way you're trading and your strategy? You know,
I'm happy to do things as you know as I'm going at the moment. I've got a nice diversified portfolio, and I'm gonna be hedging. To a small amount, nothing like what I was trying to do last year, which was, you know, just caused me so many problems. I'm still going to do little hedges and stuff. I mean, I just think that markets are so buoyant at the moment that, you know, we will get pullbacks. You know, that always happens. But I don't think we're going to get a big crash or anything. I just can't see it happening.
No, I do a minute podcast every morning, the macro news, basically. And there's good news coming out from China and, you know, and all this. And you're seeing inflation rise a bit, which is good. A little bit, you know, not too fast, but I mean, and even sort of Japan, which has been having an issue with deflation for 20 years, seems we now be coming out of that. And so, you know, you've got China, second biggest, you know, you've got the third biggest Japan, you've got America now with Trump, you know, hopefully stimulating there. So I think it could be signs. And the only issue at the fly in the ointment there is the Brexit thing at the moment, I think. And, you know, but once we see
but
some.
Even that seems to be surprising everybody. I mean, you know, all the experts were saying, oh, it's going to be gloom and doom and whatever. Economic numbers since the Brexit vote have been absolutely superb, and people say, oh well, Article 50 isn't triggered. Article 50 is irrelevant. It'll make no difference. You know, the simple fact is your average Joe blogs on the street, he doesn't even listen to you. He wouldn't even know what Article 50 was. He thinks we're leaving the EU and he's outspending cash. And that seems to be the story all around. And look at numbers from Germany today. Germany had really, you know, expectation beating numbers on the PMIs or something. And it just seems to be all around the globe at the moment that macro news is strong, which I find bizarre, really. But, what's the point of fighting it?
I guarantee one thing, whether we're in or out, we'll still have Gio Compare on the telly singing his song.
He'll be great in.
Exactly. All right, well, good for the chat, and listen, catch up again in a few weeks' time, fella. Cheers, thanks very much.
Yeah, cheers, see you later, mate, bye.
Okay, it's time for today's suggested one for your watch list. It is Hague London Oil, HNL's ticker, submitted by James. What does the company do? Oil and gas exploration. How many shares does the company have in issue? 24 million. What's current price and market cap? 8.5 pence, just a little bit above 2 million. What revenue, profit, loss does the company generate? For the 6 months ended the 30th of June, no revenue, and loss before taxation was 0.48 million, so £480,000. How much cash or debt does the company have? And no debt, cash balance of 0.16 million as at the 30th of June 2016, but a payment of $250,000 is due on completion of the NorthPet acquisition. List three reasons why people should put this company on their Vox Markets watch list. Number one, they signed a memorandum of understanding with Engie. Now 5 months in, Engie are France's version of Centrica, 27 billion market cap. The MOU states that H&L will source an asset that Engie will fund, likely gas, and given the scale of Engie, it will be something that will be developed into size. Number two, Engie will want a large asset. And number three, low market cap, and Engie will look to fund, so little dilution for H&L. So that's Hagen & Oil, H&L ticker. Please do your own research on that, but it's submitted by James as a suggestion as one of your watchlists, so please do your own research on that one. By all means, if you know of a stock that you think should be on other people's watch lists and you want to share that information to thousands of people, targeted listeners, then please go to the blog there at voxmarkets.co.uk/blog. And you'll see one of my posts there. Scroll down and you'll see a little question there. Do you know of a stock that you think should be on other people's watch lists? Please click here to fill in the form, and I could be featuring it on a future podcast. All right, it's time for today's top five most followed companies on the Vox Markets platform in the last 24 hours. At five, boom, Audio Boom. At four, Ascent Resources, AST. At three, Parallel Media Group, PAA. Dan talked about that earlier. At two, URU Metals. Dan also covered that earlier. And at number one, it's EVR Holdings. Again, virtual reality. EVRH is the ticker there. All right, here are the top five most liked RNSs on the Vox Markets platform this morning. And I've got to say, there's a joint fourth position, a three-way split, three companies. So joint fourth. It's Metal Tiger, MTR, Botswana Copper, Silver Project, license extensions and drill results. At four, also, React Energy, and that's significant investments by Ibios and notice of EGM. And also joint there with Gunn, which is Gunsind, issue of equity, and further investments in Zenith. At three, Proxarma, Beacon Network expansion. At two, Sirica Energy, operations update. And number one, it is Talao Energy, TLOU, the request for a proposal received by them from the Botswana government for a 100 megawatt power station. That's a CBM power station, of course. And tomorrow, I will have the main man from Talao Energy on the podcast. That's Tony G. Yeah, getting down, you know what I'm saying? Or Tony Gilby. It'll be coming, and I think I'll send out questions. If anyone wants to submit a question, I'll do that. That's it for the podcast. Thanks very much for listening. Don't forget, anything here is not intended as investment advice, just information on which to base your research, you know, the first stepping stone in your research on companies. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.